Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
When am I a senior executive with one of the country's largest money managers doing hailing down strangers at night on the streets of New York City? That is a question asked by financial exec and whiz kid Stephen Auth in his latest book, his new book, The Missionary of Wall Street. From managing money to saving souls on the streets of New York. And I caught up with him and sat down and did an extended interview. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, by the way, good morning, good to be with you on Catholic Connection every single day. I was so enthralled with chatting with Stephen Auth that I said to him after we were done the interview not too long ago, you've got to come back on. It just struck me in how God is using him. And it reminds me and should remind all of us that God can use all of us and wants to use all of us, no matter where we are in life, whether we're a stay-at-home mom or dad, or whether we're someone who is in college, or someone who works at an investment company like he does, or someone who works in a bank, someone who works in a hospital. Wherever God has placed you, let it be your mission field. And it can be. This was not what he expected. He was a nominal Catholic, I mean, pretty faithful, as he'll share with us. But his wife recognized that there had to be something more. So imagine this. Here he is in the middle of the Big Apple in one of the most competitive places of the world, Wall Street, crazy, busy, hectic. And then he is also out there witnessing on the streets of the Big Apple. Let me just give you a little bit of a sample from this book. And by the way, again, the book is from Sophia Institute Press, and it's The Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York, from Stephen F. Auth, A-U-T-H, if you want to look the book up, and you'll find it, of course, on our EWTN religious catalog. There's a great little summary on the back of the book of a couple of quotes. For starters, are you Catholic, my friends and I ask? Would you like a rosary? Would you like to go to confession here tonight? Are you kidding, responds one man. Been there, done that, says another. God, no, chimes in a fast-walking atheist. You Catholics are all pedophiles, yells one angry woman. Another hands us a bag of, well, dog poop, quite frankly. 6-year-old Michael even has advice, why don't you evangelize out in the Middle East where they need you? We're needed here, we say. This city needs Jesus too. It needs his love. Some nights the tide turns in the Lord's favor. A young woman approaches us, decked out in showy attire. Are you guys really Catholic? I didn't think there were any Catholics left. Can I have a purple rosary? Sure. Where are you going? We have lots to talk about. I've got to run. I'm a stripper, but I'm going to pray with this rosary. Imagine the kinds of encounters, and these are just two examples that Stephen Auth and his other missionaries have on the streets of New York City. I just found his journey and this book and his testimony so fascinating that I wanted to have him back on. And so just recently before I left for Italy, I sat down with him and did 45 minutes on this journey. So I wanted to share this time that I spent with Stephen with you because I think it's really crucial right now in our culture with so many of these discussions going on about things that we never thought that we would ever see or hear about, such as infanticide and the other issues that are going on attacking directly the dignity of the human person. Turning this around all starts, first of all, with a change in our own hearts. We can only change ourselves through the grace of God. And so we have to start, as Stephen Auth did, with our own journey into the heart of Christ and truly embracing the sacraments, the teachings of the church. And then we can go out and make the effort. And that's what he did. That's what you hear in his journey. But he didn't stop with his own change, his own positive commitment to the church. He knew that he had to share it. As we prepare to go into this interview this morning, I thought I would give you a little shot in the arm, in addition to Stephen's comments that are coming up after the break, to go back to January of 2018 and actor Jim Caviezel's amazing testimony that he gave to the students attending the Focus Conference last year. FOCUS is an acronym standing for Fellowship of Catholic University Students. And Conveysel emphasized the importance of our personal commitment to Christ and the Church and the willingness to stand up, as Stephen Auth and other missionaries out there are doing, to defend the truth of who we are, made in the image and likeness of God. Take a listen.
For we are a culture now in decline. A people in danger of succumbing to our excesses. Our whole world is entrenched in sin. And there in the quiets of our hearts, God is calling out to us, each one of us, to give ourselves entirely to Him. And how often we ignore Him, ignore that sweet call. The great saint of Auschwitz, Saint Maximilian Kolbe, said that indifference is the greatest sin of the 20th century. Well, my brothers and sisters, it is the greatest sin of the 21st century as well. We must shake off this indifference, this destructive tolerance of evil. That only our faith in the wisdom of Christ can save us. But it requires warriors ready to risk their reputations, their names, even our very lives, to stand for the truth. Set yourselves apart from this corrupt generation. Be saints. You weren't made to fit in. You were born to stand out. For in our country now, we are only too happy to go with the flow. We have a shrine to freedom now, where all choices are equal no matter what the consequences are. Do you honestly think this is true freedom? Pope John Paul the Great said, democracy cannot be sustained without a shared commitment to certain moral truths about the human person and the human community. The basic question before a democratic society is this: how ought we to live together? Seeking an answer to this question, can society exclude moral truth and moral reasoning? Every generation of Americans needs to know that freedom exists not to do what you like, but having the right to do what you ought. That is the freedom that I wish for you. Freedom from sin. Freedom from your weaknesses. Freedom from this slavery that sin makes out of all of us. That is the freedom that is worth dying for. It reminds me what Mel Gibson first intoned in his Academy Award-winning film Braveheart when he said to his ragtag army, and I say to you tonight, I see before me a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You have come to fight as free men. Free men you are. What would you do without freedom? Would you fight? This man says, no, we'll run and we'll live. Yeah? Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live for at least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the years from this day to that for one chance? Just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that you can take our lives, but you can never take our freedom. Every man dies. Not every man truly lives. You, we all must fight for that authentic freedom and live, my friends. By God, we must live. And with the Holy Spirit as your shield and Christ as your sword, may you join Saint Michael and all the angels in sending Lucifer and his henchmen straight right back to hell where they belong. Saul means great one. What does Paul mean? little one. So if we wish to be great in the eyes of God, what do we need to be little? What do we need to be? Sorry. Little. May God love you and keep you and guide you all the days of your life.
So whether it's like a Jim Caviezel on the big screen or a Stephen Oth on Wall Street or maybe you on Main Street or in your own backyard, we are all called to evangelize. We'll get some great ideas up next.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This month, you can bless Catholic mothers struggling to care for their families in developing countries. They spend hours collecting drinking water from rivers and often unsafe sources. With your support, Cross Catholic Outreach provides these women and their children with access to clean, safe water. Lift the poor's burdens, protect their health, and restore their hope. Call Cross Catholic Outreach at 888-766-2426 or visit crosscatholic.org/Ave Maria.
This is Cy Kellett. Join me for Catholic Answers Live. It's 2 hours dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Designed for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, it's your opportunity to hear from and talk with some of the leading apologists and theologians in the church today. You've got questions? We've got Catholic answers. Catholic Answers Live, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Join today's discussion and engage with producers on the Ave Maria Radio Facebook and Twitter accounts at Ave Maria Radio. Respond to interviews and learn who's coming up on Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, and other Ave Maria Radio programs. Make it easier by downloading the Ave Maria app on your smart devices. Then just tap on the Facebook and Twitter icons to get plugged in on the things that matter most. That's the Ave Maria Radio app or at Ave Maria Radio. Build the church. Bless the nations.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Really appreciate Stephen Oth joining me for the entire program today. You may recall that just before Easter, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks before Easter weekend, we actually had Stephen Oth on the program, and I was so intrigued by his book and his whole story that I had to dive more deeply into it. The book is A Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. It's a beautiful and powerful book, published by our friends at Sophia Institute, and we'll give you a little bit more information of where you can purchase the book. It's always, of course, on the religious catalog at EWTN. Maybe it's the Jersey connection, because Stephen and I are both from Jersey. Maybe it was the Eastern accent that I connected with. I don't know, but I think really the big thing was his dedication to the Lord and doing missionary work on the streets of the Big Apple, which is incredible. Not to mention his background, the success that he's had, but all of us who've been there and have had a lot of success without God know that it's pretty darn empty. Right, Stephen? Good morning.
Yes, success without him isn't success at all, Teresa.
Yeah, amen, amen. So let's talk about, go back to a little bit of the beginning. You had a very, very successful life, and you're still very successful in terms of your work in finance. In terms of your journey, when did you get to the point where you realized, as we were just mentioning, that there had to be something more?
Yeah, it is a journey, Teresa, but I'd say that a big wake-up call moment for me, and it's mentioned early on in the book, is when I had electrical malfunction in my heart, basically stopped. And I was in a cardiac ward. This is way back in 2002. And interestingly, I learned later that my devoted wife had been praying, you know, upset us, Lord. And that's what the result of that was. And I had my first confession. You know, I have a priest from the Legion, actually, came up. I just met him a couple of weeks earlier, and he came up. It was Thanksgiving Day. None of my parish priests were available. So he came up to give me anointing of the sick because we weren't really sure, you know, how things were going. And I had my first confession in probably 20 or 30 years. Really, I'd been away from that sacrament and really pretty much away from the church. I was at this point kind of gotten myself back to being a Sunday Catholic anyway. And the takeaway from that was, as Father John put it, you know, Steve, you've got a lot of talents. They're all given to you by the Lord, and you're using them for yourself. You're not using them for him. And I wrote a prayer down that day, you know, Lord, I know you're calling me to do something. You know, I don't know where that's leading, but I'll follow your call. That was a big moment for me.
So those darn praying spouses, because my husband prayed me back into the church, and I was the one who was in a similar way, where our life was upside down because career had taken hold of me in terms of being also in a very competitive field in broadcast news. And when a spouse prays for God to intercede somehow, look out, because big things can and do happen, especially yeah. if you wake up and realize and have an open heart to it. But in terms of your wife, so there was turmoil in your life. You were too much away from home in terms of everything you were doing on Wall Street. What was it that prompted her to ask for God's intercession in your marriage?
I think she felt, it wasn't so much, I mean, I was away from home a lot. It was very, very hectic time, very stressful. I think we had a pretty good marriage, actually, at that time, Teresa. I wouldn't say it was like there was a marriage difficulty so mm-hmm. much as she felt, she knew I was called for more. And I think she felt I needed to be closer to God. She sensed that. She understood that. And that she was praying for me, for my soul.
Wow. Talking with the author of Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. Okay, so you have this experience with your heart, and you'd say, okay, Lord, I'll do your will. But did you ever think the will would lead you to being a missionary in New York City?
No. No, I just want to compromise and do something. Shortly thereafter, I started something called the Lumen Institute, which you may have heard of. It's mm-hmm. It's a Catholic group designed to give better formation to Catholic leaders, and starting with myself. I was they called me Lumen number one because I was the first guinea pig. But I thought that was sort of what I was called to do. But that led to a mission in Mexico, probably around 2006 or so. But that was another, you know, I talk about a journey, but that was another, none of this is in the book, by the way, but another kind of conversion experience for me down in this little village in the mountains in Mexico with my younger son. He had signed up to do this, so I came along, frankly, just to protect him and really had never thought I'd be a missionary. That just didn't strike me as something that I was remotely qualified for, which, by the way, I'm not. As I say in the book, the Lord doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called.
Equips the called, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were there all week, you know, sleeping on the floors of this man's house. And when I left, it was Saturday evening, and we did the vigil service with them. We didn't have a priest. So and I wanted to give him something. And I had in my pocket a rosary that I had blessed by the Holy Father, JP2, and I think he had just died, actually. It must have been he died right after that. So when would that have been, 2006, maybe?
2005 is when he passed
2005
away.
Yeah. when he mm-hmm. died, and so this is 2006. So I've got the JP2 rosary, and I get this inspiration to give this to the so-called mayor of this town. And of course, I say to myself, well, okay, what else have I got here? I mean, I can't give that up. It's like my religious souvenirs. It's irreplaceable. And, of course, when you get an inspiration like that, what else can you do? And I end up presenting the rosary from the Papa, you know, in my broken Spanish, I relayed that this was blessed by the Pope. And the transformation of this old man, when he received this treasure for him, this was the Pope come to his little village, basically. And the reverence with which he treated this rosary was very humbling to me. And I saw in his eyes the face of Christ. And, you know, that evening I prayed a lot, and I had a kind of another little conversion experience, ended up joining Regnum Christi, which is an evangelical movement within the Catholic Church. So it was a very moving experience. There were a lot of things that happened in Mexico. At one point I went blind on a mission, and that was a sort of embrace suffering moment. And I lost the sight of my left eye, and I didn't want to tell anybody because I knew if I did, the mission would end. And we had been assigned a certain village. We were trying to get to everybody. So I'm wandering around the streets of this village with one eye. No one knows it. I'm reading the gospel in Spanish, and I'm thinking, well, if this is what the Lord wants, with these this eyes of mine, I'm thinking I'm probably losing the other one next. This is kind of a beautiful thing to be reading the gospel to these people here in this little tiny dusty town. And they asked me to give a sermon or a talk, if you will, on Mount Calvary at the end of the Via Crucis. So here I am on the top of this little mountain in this village. I'm half blind, and I'm full of joy. I felt completely at peace. And that was another kind of experience for me of I felt the Lord protecting me, and I wasn't really worried about it.
Right.
You know, kind of worked out later, but that was all part of my journey. But fast forward to 2009, and it was the middle of the financial crisis. And by the way, Teresa, what's interesting, you know, people are asking me about this Wall Street connection, and what's fascinating is that a lot of the things I learned as I grew deeper in my faith became very helpful in my success on Wall Street. I mean, I was very successful, yes. I've become much more successful since I, you know, had this deeper conversion experience.
Yeah, isn't that interesting how that works, right?
Yeah, it's really kind of crazy, but the Lord just keeps throwing fish at me, you know?
Right. Well, because you're open.
Yeah, open to his love and his guidance. Yeah. So anyway, I get this call from my wife. It's the middle of the second financial crisis now. The first time left me with this heart condition, 2002. In 2009, the markets are going crazy, and I'm having a bad day. I settled down in the evening in my hotel room, and I get a call from Evelyn saying, Steve, I signed us up to do this mission in New York. And I said, sweetheart, where are we doing this mission? And she says, New York. I said, sweetheart, what are we going to do, stand on street corners looking for Catholics? She goes, yeah, that's kind of the idea. I said, sweetheart, please. I've lived in New York all my life. I can assure you this is a crazy idea. It'll never work. I mean, they're going to be putting cigars out in our foreheads the whole night. She goes, oh, it's not a whole night. It's actually 3 days.
Like, oh, my gosh.
My goodness. So, you know, that was the call, if you will. And you mentioned Evelyn again. I mean, she plays a big role in the book, although she's never identified until the very end, as you know. But she's this mysterious missionary in the back of the church. But, yeah, she's my spiritual muse, maybe.
Yeah, so is my husband, so I totally get it. We're chatting with Stephen Auth and having a great extended interview with author, speaker, and financial expert, and also, most importantly, missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. Get this book. It just really is very dynamic. And when you were talking about your experience in Mexico, I'm thinking of St. Paul and how he was blinded temporarily, and then, of course, he saw everything that the Lord was starting to begin to show him. Sophia Institute has published this book, The Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. And what I love about this story is that God, for all of us, will use our gifts and talents. When we open ourselves up to him, we have no idea how he will use them, but he will. And people think that there's limitations when we go in the direction of God, but just the opposite happens. As Stephen just said, he's had more success and is having more fun and much more at peace than he was, even when he was at the height earlier in his career of what he thought was the height of his financial career. That doesn't mean that you go into this area of evangelization for success. That's not it, because the success is God's in terms of saving souls. But the idea is that God, we put him in a box, and we shouldn't, because he's going to use those gifts and talents that we have in unbelievable ways, because he's God and we are so not. More with Stephen Auth when we come back on this special edition of Catholic Connection, talking about his beautiful book, The Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. Happy Easter, and how is God calling you to his will to do great things for him and his one holy Catholic and apostolic church? We'll be right back.
Angels. Pop songs are written about them, pretty women are called them, and the popular imagination sees them as chubby little cherubs playing harps on clouds. I think bad art has ruined true devotion to the holy angels. They're actually fearsome, powerful creatures, and when they appear to people in the Bible, it's a life-changing, knee-knocking experience. Angels are God's messengers. Mortimer Adler said, angels are like statues in reverse. A statue is a body without a mind. An angel is a mind without a body. In the order of creation, angels sit between mankind and God. Pure spirits like God, but created like us. Next time you're at Mass, listen for the number of references to the angels. You'll be amazed. And you'll want to call upon your guardian angel, who waits for that call. That's why God made him. I'm Patrick Coffin of patrickcoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
Why does marriage require complete fidelity between spouses? The Catholic Catechism states that the intimate union of marriage is a mutual self-giving of two persons ordered to the welfare of their children, which requires that there be an unbreakable union between them. The deepest reason is found in the fidelity of Christ to his church. Through the sacrament of matrimony, the spouses are able to represent that fidelity and witness to it. For these reasons, the spouses can be nothing but completely faithful to one another. Marriage is such a deep, personal union of giving oneself to the other that it cannot, the Catechism asserts, be an arrangement until further notice. As difficult as it may seem to retain this indissolubility for a lifetime, it is made possible by God's irrevocable love in which the couple shares and which will support them through their marital journey. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Chatting with Stephen Auth, the missionary of Wall Street, for managing money to saving souls on the streets of New York. It is a fascinating story of God's love, mercy, and what God can do with our little yes. Again, the book is from SophiaInstitute.com. There's so many directions that we could go with this interview, but I think, Stephen, for our listeners, many people do not feel that they are qualified. And you mentioned God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called, which is spot on. But still, many people are holding themselves back for a number of reasons. And you and I can speak from personal experience. Number one, there is a sense of fear of letting go of control, which Americans are all about, control and productivity. And then there's also an unworthiness, thinking that there's no way God could use me with my, maybe it's a sinful background, or maybe I don't see myself as talented or gifted enough. And yet, if you look at the stories of our great saints, they will say the same thing, that we hold ourselves back, especially my favorite, Saint Teresa of Avila, always talks about, you know, not putting God in a box. So what would you say to people this morning who feel really called to do more but are holding back because of fear on some level?
Yeah, I would really ask them to consider just letting go. It's one reason I wrote the book. And, I started off with a little bit of my own background, because I think what's inspiring to me about it is clearly I wasn't qualified. I mean, there's some people that, you know, at least are holy or something. I was just not qualified for this. It's obvious. I had certain talents for sure that he could use effectively, and I realized later, oh my, I see what why he might have thought, gee, I'm good at this, I'm good at that, but completely unqualified. And it's simply a matter of getting over that. In fact, Teresa, I think it's kind of prideful, really, in my case, that, you know, I'm so used to, or I was so used to doing things on my own, you know, top of my class at Princeton, Harvard, blah, 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 and, you know, fighting my way up the ladder, I can do it. We think if I take on something that I don't think I can do, then I shouldn't do it. And we don't consider that the Lord can do it. He can do anything. And, you know, and it's kind of prideful, I think, to turn back. I don't know that that's necessarily what people think about when they say I'm not qualified, to think it's humble. But
well, a false sense of humility, actually, right?
Could be.
In some ways, could be.
Yeah.
But I totally identify with you, because in my career, I was extremely, very much a type, still am a type A personality. I mean, I think God uses that to his glory. But I hit all of my goals for broadcasting by the time I was 28. I said I was going to be on television in a major market by the time I was 30, and I hit that by 28. I graduated top of my class, outstanding journalism graduate. I was the only journalism student in my college to have 4 internships by the time I graduated. You weren't supposed to have an internship until your sophomore or junior year. I managed to have it my freshman year. And I just kept going, 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 and thinking that this is all about me. And then realizing, when my life is pretty much turned upside down and in shambles, that, oh, it's about God. And even though we think that we are not worthy, God is using it. We don't understand the pieces of the puzzle, because in your position as a financial whiz kid on Wall Street, that's something that the successful people of the Big Apple of New York, where everything, you know, the center of the universe, basically, in terms of commerce and advertising and money, and it's the Big Apple, right? So people can identify with you as a professional. Oh, you're someone who has achieved a great deal of professional success. So God uses that to connect with people.
Yeah, and I'll confess something to you, Teresa. The title of this book, all along in my heart, was a title called Delivered by Grace, because there's a lovely story, you know, in the book about a man who's brought back to church after 40 years to confession. And we had been working on him out on the corner. He wouldn't go in. Later on, he comes out about an hour later and gives me a big bear hug, big guy. And says, Steve, I feel like 100 pounds was just lifted off my shoulders. I'm restored. And I said, well, John, how did it happen? You know, you didn't want to go in. And he says, well, it was that young woman in front of the church. And he says, what was her name? And I said, well, her name is actually Grace.
Aww.
And he says, Steve, that's it. I was delivered by Grace.
Aww.
And so there was this sense, as you go through the book, of all these folks that are delivered by grace, if you will, literally and figuratively. But importantly, I think as you read it, you realize that the missionaries are being delivered by grace.
Yes.
And certainly the guy writing the book was. And so there was this beautiful thing. But how does this segue back to what you're saying? You know, it was Sophia who said, Steve, you know, the reality is, like it or not, what makes this interesting is your role on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And we should title it that way. And that's really how the title developed. But it was another one of these things where it wasn't my idea to call it that. But there's a lot of truth in it. And it really, you know, it's what's interesting about this, I think.
Yeah. But how do you connect with people on the streets of New York City when it's so crowded, it's so hectic, and a lot of times, and I know the last time you were on with this, you can sense, because of the Holy Spirit, that it's, you see a lot of emptiness, you can sense the emptiness, and a lot of those are like walking wounded or zombies. How do you connect with them in terms of the actual witnessing portion? I know people are wondering about that.
Yeah, well, we start out, first of all, I always tell the missionaries, like, joy and love are really important. So, you know, our approach is almost humorous, if you will, but always a smile of, a real smile on our face. And, you know, you got to get yourself in the right place spiritually, really, that you you do just love everyone you see. And that's kind of our attitude. And people feel that. But in a loving way, we'll ask them, hey, are you Catholic? Or sometimes if I'm overwhelmed by, you know, 15 people walking by at once, I'll say, Catholics, Catholics, any Catholics here? You know, I've got a rosary in one hand, a pamphlet in the other. And it's a provocative question, and it results in all sorts of responses. So you'll get Catholics who will say they're Catholic, and then you have a chance to stop or at least walk with them and talk about the service schedule for what's going on, if it's Holy Week, for instance. And then, you know, usually after we've had a little discussion, I get their name right away. We always try to get people's names because that's how you connect with someone.
Right.
You know, at some point I'll pop the big question. I say, okay, great. You're going to Mass here. Hey, by the way, you know, did you get your Easter confession in yet? And, of course, you know, wow. They'll say, well, not exactly. I say, well, how not exactly? And, well, it's been a while. Like, well, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? 20 years, you know, and then we kind of, you know, try to talk to them about the sacrament, find out what about is holding them back. Sometimes it's they're just embarrassed. They don't know how to do it, you know, so they just need to be talked through. Sometimes they think, oh, I can't tell a person what I did. I mean, it's just too embarrassing. And I pull out little prayer card, Psalm 139. And then sometimes, you know, Psalms 139, Teresa, he knows the
right
one about, he knows everything you've done,
yep,
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's something more than that. It's something they think is unforgivable. So we have ways of dealing with that.
Stephen, hang on. We're going to take a quick break and then one more segment. I can't believe we're almost done. I wanted to ask you so many more questions, but we'll continue in just a minute. Stephen Auth is our guest.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Vatican II teaches that every baptized person is a participant in the threefold office of Jesus, which is priest, prophet, and king. So as priest, Christ is a sanctifier. He effects a reconciliation between divinity and humanity, right, by his great sacrifice on the cross. Every baptized person does indeed participate in that, in the measure that we all have that calling to reconcile divinity and humanity, to bring God to people and people to God. That's true of every baptized person. Vatican II further specifies that the ordained priesthood is different, not only in degree, but in kind. And it has to do with the identification between the ordained priest, I think, and the Mass, and a unique relationship to the sacraments. Every baptized person has a task of reconciling divinity and humanity. The ordained priest does it in this sort of heightened sacramental and Eucharistic way.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
why
a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The EWTN home video highlight for May is the story of Father John Sullivan. A Protestant born into a life of privilege, he left everything to follow God's call to become a Catholic priest and serve the poor and afflicted. And the faithful were blessed with countless miracles. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or call 1-800-854-6316.
Hopefully we're encouraging you to think outside the box and don't put God in a box, because with him all things are possible, and it is one heck of a ride when you submit and continue to resubmit to the Lord. Having an amazing conversation about evangelization with Stephen Auth, who is an expert on that topic. He has written a terrific book, The Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. Okay, you were talking about confession. I want to let you finish that thought in terms of asking people about when was the last time you went to confession. You were sharing a story.
Right, and, you know, a couple of thoughts on that, Teresa. One, to me, confession's like the lost sacrament. It's one of the sacraments that the Lord gave us. He knows we're human. He knows we fail. And the opportunity to go back to Him and seek forgiveness and get back on track is so important to our spiritual lives. And too often now, it's hard for Catholics, everyday Catholics even, to get the sacrament. We've relegated it to 30 minutes before the 5 o'clock Mass, whatever. And, you have a tendency, I think, human beings, to start rationalizing things and say, well, that's not so bad. And, you start sliding down. And so the sacrament of confession, for people that have not been to it in 20 years, and, I'm like Exhibit A there, you end up with a wall between you and the Lord. It's hard to pray to Him. It's hard to hear His voice. And so we really think, the mission is centrally focused on ultimately getting people back to that sacrament. And we've seen it. And, I was thinking about in the break where you're talking about the impact on you of seeing how your show has impacted other people. They'll write in and tell you that. And it's similar. The idea that you're helping the Lord bring a soul back.
Right, because it's not us. He's the Savior. We're just one of the tools.
Right, yeah. And that He's using you to help with that process. It's so transforming for the missionaries. It's so beautiful.
Well, it's humbling. It's extremely humbling, and there's this huge sense of responsibility.
Yeah, it starts to really energize you, and it's like we can't let a soul get by us here. Another thought I had about this, when you were asking about how do you do it, how do you start the conversation, for a lot of your listeners, because obviously they're not all going to come flocking to the streets of New York to do this. This is really radical.
Right.
But there's so many people in our circle around us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, matters spiritual are things that the culture has taught us to keep private. And, in fact, the culture today doesn't really want it discussed. And it's like, well, that's a wheelhouse you don't go to. And so there's so many people around us that we would be surprised are suffering spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we don't bring it up with them. And one of the things I've learned about the mission is ask everyone you see. Okay, 20 maybe don't want to talk about it, but there are quite a few people out there in our circles who are suffering spiritually. And if given an invitation, sometimes that's all they need. Hey, would you like to come to Mass to pray with me? Or I'm going to Mass. I'm going to light a candle later. Do you have a prayer intention? Opening people up to a pathway back. Sometimes they need to have someone hold their hand because they don't know how to say, the act of contrition anymore. I mean, to put it very literally.
Yeah. You know what's very profound, what you just said? My spiritual director told me a long time ago that when he is out to lunch or out to dinner with anyone, whether it's a friend, family, or staff members, and the waiter or waitress comes over and they're about to order, he says, well, we're going to be saying grace soon. Thank you for your assistance. Is there anything we can pray for in your life, in your family? He's never had anyone reject that offer. As a matter of fact, he says it's amazing the conversations that come out of that. He said he remembers one waitress who said, I can't believe, she burst into tears, I can't believe you asked me that. I've got a son who's got surgery today, or another person talking about some other situation that they're facing that's extremely difficult. Despite everything that's going on in the world and all the attacks, at the end of the day, because we're made for relationship with God, we still need Him.
And we identify with that.
Right.
And, I that's something I always do is pray. It could be a business dinner or whatever. I always pray at the beginning of the dinner. And people, as a minimum, are respectful of that. But even that little witness can spark sometimes a really interesting conversation, but at least spark someone's feelings about their own spirituality.
Yeah, and the other thing you said early on in the interview, Stephen, that struck me, and this is so true, is that just loving people and just being nice and being polite in this world where everybody's screaming at each other, and everybody is talking over one another, especially when if you turn on particular networks, everybody's yelling. They can't even get their point across without being polite and allowing the other person to finish what they have to say. Just being polite, opening the door, saying have a blessed day, have a good day to your mail person, whoever it may be, the clerk in the grocery store, just being kind.
Yeah, and people witness that, Teresa. And, on the streets, it's utterly disarming. We have so many instances, and there's some stories in the book about this, where, because obviously the other side of this very provocative question, are you Catholic, is they're not Catholic. Okay, in some cases, they're Christians. Or we had all sorts of people, Muslims, end up in the church praying. Because, one example is this guy comes by and says, are you Catholic, and he's Jewish. And he says, I promise you, people are all trying to kill us. And he's about to storm off with that. Of course, I couldn't let that go. So I hey, what's your name, Josh? And we start talking. And I said, Josh, a little bit, give me a little break here. We're not trying to kill you all. So we go on and on. And the longer it goes, the more you realize that Josh is suffering spiritually. He's secularly Jewish, but he hasn't been to his synagogue in years.
Right.
And the story ends with Josh promising to go back to the synagogue, heal his own soul, and pray for us, and, vice versa. So if you can respond, I know this is, Christian by the book, but it works. If you can respond with love, even when you're confronted with anger, it's disarming to people.
Yeah, yeah. I've found that even with listeners where when they're attacking you, just write back and say, okay, well, we may not disagree, but this is, why I did what I did or said what I said, and, we're open to discussion. And it's interesting how many people will write back and apologize for losing their temper.
Yeah. They'll come back, and I had a guy just last week, we were up doing the mission, and, I don't know how I would describe him spiritually. It's not so important, but just, starts the thing off very aggressively. And my response is a smile and joy and listen a little bit. Say, hey, what are you thinking about? I usually ask questions, Teresa, rather than make statements. That's a great way of diffusing anger. And I'll never forget how the thing ended. It took 20 minutes, but it ended with him literally hugging me and kissing me.
Yeah.
And say, I'm going to pray for you, Steve. And I say, I'm going to pray for you, John.
So simple. We make it so complicated. With thinking, I know people probably have this on their minds, and some people may be challenged by it, given the times that we're in. Anyone come to you regarding the priest abuse scandal and said, oh, how can you stand there and witness about the Catholic faith? And if so, how do you handle that?
Yeah, in fact, the very first, I think early on in the book, I describe this atheist from the neighborhood. This was the very first mission in 2009, shortly after I told my wife this wasn't going to work. I'm out there, and this was, I guess, when the first scandal started to break hard, and she says, you Catholics, you're all a bunch of pedophiles. And, when someone's angry like that, I respond joyfully, and I say, God bless you. Have a good day. We're here because we love you. And I don't try to give a defense
right
at that point. It just ends up in a kind of mutual escalation. And I always tell the missionaries, listen, on things like that, or atheists who say there is no God, you're not going to win a battle of logic.
Exactly. Here. Going back and forth, point by point. It's not going to work. Right.
It's not going to work. So what you want to do with that interaction is don't get upset, respond joyfully and lovingly, and gradually bring them around. There's this interesting character that appears throughout the book. I was curious to see whether, people pick up on him, the hat vendor. And the first mission, we're out there on the corner, and he gruffly pushes us off his corner, which is a key corner for the church. It's right on there. And he says, this is my corner. I pay for this. You guys get out of here. And, we move about a foot, but that's about all we give them. And over the course of the ensuing decade, this hat seller is witnessing all these spiritual conversations that are occurring. And he appears and reappears at different points, but you can see him gradually being converted just by the witness.
Right.
And near the end of the book, you find him donating 120 of his hats, virtually his entire stand, to the missionaries one cold night. It's like, so if you, I say don't escalate, just love.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, people, we think we have to have a result right away, that we're going to change someone's mind on the spot. Maybe sometimes, but I'm sure you've found with evangelization that it's a process, as it was with your own journey. And I remember earlier this year, there was a man who wrote to me about something, very angry, and he was accusing Al Cresta and I of all kinds of things. And later on in the email, it was very long and just an attack. And he was venting. And well, he wasn't attacking me. There were issues in his life. At the bottom, he said, "I'm so glad I'm out of the Catholic Church and yada, 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 and I don't have to listen to a priest or in a white robe." And I wrote back and I said, "You know what? I said, you're really angry. I'm not going to have a point-by-point, you know, counterpoint discussion with you. But you're still listening to Catholic radio, obviously, as angry as you are." I said, "I'm really glad." And I said, "Here's my number. Here's Al Cresta's office number. I'm sorry. It sounds like you were hurt by the church. If you were, on behalf of the church, I apologize. Anytime you want to talk, let me know." And I left it. And I said, "In the meantime, I'm going to pray for you." I haven't heard from him, but he didn't respond in a nasty way, which I kind of expected. So I pray for him. And I remember him at Mass. And I'm just thinking, Lord, work, because there's a lot of pain. I think once you do this for a little while, you can sense when people are coming from a place of pain.
Right. And if you just give them a little bit there, you know, and give them a God bless you. I love to do that with the atheists, by the way.
Yeah.
Now, I'm an atheist. Okay, well, God bless you. Have a happy Easter. Thank you.
Or they get mad. "Don't pray for me. I don't want you to pray for me." Well, I'm sorry. You can't stop me from praying. I had one woman say that to me on Facebook. We were talking about the abortion issue, and she was saying this, that, and the other thing. And I said, I don't know, you know, why you have this opinion, but we'll try to continue to present the pro-life teaching and why it's so crucial. But I'm going to pray for you. "Don't you dare pray for me. You will not pray for me." Sweetie, I'm praying for you. Done.
Yeah,
and that's the best thing we can do. Yeah, exactly. Stephen, what a joy. Thank you for your witness, and God bless you. And I'm sure the book is doing well.
It is. It's off to a good start, Teresa. It's getting good feedback. So it's good.
Well, I hope this helps, because it's a great read, and I just love what you're doing. And again, in the midst of New York City, in rough and tumble New York, the heart of everything, the busyness, the finances, the money, the advertising. I mean, everything is right there. And yet, because of you, so is God. So we thank you for that.
Here you go.
All right. The book again is The Missionary, You Too, The Missionary of Wall Street, From Managing Money to Saving Souls on the Streets of New York. Sophia Institute Press published it. SophiaInstitute.com, also at the EWTN Religious Catalog. Stay tuned.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
Do you want an affordable healthcare option that enables you to protect your family and live your Catholic faith? CMF Curo is the Catholic healthcare ministry that works to bring health to the whole person, spirit, mind, and body. CMF Curo allows you to share health costs with other Christians and is more affordable than health insurance. Go to mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. I want to announce that Steve Ray and I will be going on pilgrimage to the great land of Poland, August 21st to August 30th.
We're going to follow John Paul II, Maria Faustina and the Divine Mercy, and Maximilian Kolbe. We're even going to visit Auschwitz and see the place where Maximilian Kolbe gave his life in the cell there.
People can get more information at AveMariaRadio.net. And where else, Steve?
CatholicConvert.com. Click on the big pilgrimage banner or call 866-468-468. 1420.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Anxietydisorders.com.
It's practically an epidemic. 20% of Americans suffer from anxiety disorders, and millions more wrestle with worry and stress on a daily basis. For us as Christians, all that worry gets mixed up with a lot of guilt. How can we stop worrying and start living an anxiety-free life? I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, and in my new book, Unworried, A Life Without Anxiety, you'll learn how to respect how God made us and build new habits of thinking, communicating, and acting that will help set you free from worry. You can get your copy of Unworried and any of my other books at AveMariaRadio.net.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Catholic Connection. And just remember, if you're a new listener or not, if you've been on board with us for a while, you may not know that we are co-produced actually by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. And you can find us both online, all kinds of great resources at EWTN.com and AveMariaRadio.net. Now, I give you those websites quite often because I want to remind you, if you heard something on the show today, yesterday, last week, you can go to those websites and you can go to the archive sections or you can look them up and we have records of them for you. And if you heard, let's say, maybe about a book or a document, you can certainly go to EWTN in the religious catalog to order an item, or you can look up any type of encyclical or papal document or information about any of our shows there as well. So these are great resources in addition to great Catholic radio every day. We'll see you next time on Catholic Connection.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.